Support for Today Explained comes from BetterHelp. We'd all like to find an extra hour every day for the things that really matter. Therapy might be able to help you suss out what is most important and prioritize it. And BetterHelp can make the entire process convenient and painless. You can fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist in practically no time at all. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. You can visit betterhelp.com/explain today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/explained.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him. The sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money where he earns 5% annual percentage yield. So he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
On the show last week, we covered a new crisis on the southern border of the United States. Thousands of Haitians were living in squalor under a bridge outside Del Rio, Texas. The Biden administration had begun deporting them to Haiti. But there were also rumors that the Biden administration wanted to send some of them to Guantanamo, the naval base that houses the notorious prison site on the coast of Cuba, has had a less notorious migrant detention center in the past.
About this, can you definitively clarify whether or not the administration will send migrants at the border to Guantanamo?
We will not. There's never been a plan to do that.
The White House denied that was ever in the cards.
I think there was some confusion related to the Migrant Operations Center, which is used has been used for decades to process migrants interdicted at sea for third country resettlement. This request for
the brief attention on Guantanamo was a reminder that despite the war on terror winding down in Afghanistan, the war on terror's detention center in Guantanamo Bay is still very much open and active. It's almost 20 years old. President Obama tried and failed to shut it down, and now President Biden wants to try again. On the show today, we're going to look at the challenges he faces and hear from a former Guantanamo detainee. But first,
Jasmine El-Gamal, I'm a senior manager for MENA at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue and a former Middle East advisor at the Department of Defense. I was also a translator at Guantanamo Bay.
We asked Jasmine to remind us why Guantanamo Bay's detention center was opened in the first place.
I would say the biggest argument was centered around the use of this term, global war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
There were a lot of terms that came into play around that time as the Bush administration tried to legally justify sending these people to Guantanamo Bay. I mean, this was something that really was unprecedented at the time. We went into Afghanistan and we were fighting an enemy. And this is really important to understand in terms of why we were calling them enemy combatants versus prisoners.
These are enemy combatants who are waging war on our nation. We have a right under the laws of war, and we have an obligation to the American people to detain these enemies and stop them from rejoining the battle.
We were fighting an enemy that wasn't wearing a traditional uniform and that wasn't part of a traditional army. And so the Bush administration used that as an excuse or as justification to not treat them as prisoners of war and afford them the rights that they would have been afforded under the Geneva Conventions had they been part of a conventional army.
All of us in the administration are united in the view that they are not deserving of prisoner of war status. There is a question that we are examining, and it is a difficult question, and that is the legal application of the Geneva Convention. This is a new kind of conflict. It's a new world. But at the same time, we want to make sure everybody understands that we are a nation of law, abiding by our international obligations.
So the whole, you know, a big part of the reasoning and the justification for bringing them to Gitmo and treating them as enemy combatants was because the Bush administration said this is a new type of war, this is a new type of enemy, the enemy doesn't make itself known to us, and therefore we should not have to treat them as if they were a traditional army and a traditional foe.
And certainly this had opposition from the jump.
It had opposition, but, you know, for people who weren't really following it at the time, I think it's important to kind of highlight, in hindsight, it's really easy to see how, you know, horrible this was and just how wrong it was. Not to say that we didn't know at the time that it was wrong. I mean, obviously, it was clear from the start. But in terms of the legal justifications and the legal kind of hoops that were being jumped, I think a lot of people didn't really understand what was happening until years later. The Bush administration kind of, I would say, used the fact that people were shell-shocked after September 11th. People were afraid.
Remember, these are the ones in Guantanamo Bay are killers. They don't share the same values we share. They would like nothing more than to come after America or our friends and allies, and so therefore it's in our national interest to make sure we know enough about them before we decide what to do with them.
A lot of people didn't want these enemies, you know, this faceless enemy that didn't wear a uniform, that wasn't part of a traditional army, they didn't want them anywhere near the United States. There was a lot of fear at the time, a lot of confusion as to what we were dealing with, and I think the Bush administration and their legal team really utilized that fear and that uncertainty to create justifications for bringing them to Gitmo.
Do we know to date how many people have been detained at Guantanamo Bay?
The New York Times reports that since 2002, about 780 detainees have been held at one point or the other in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, at the detention center, and about 39 remain today.
So who ends up there?
I mean, who ended up there? I mean, everybody. You know, in the fog of war, sort of, you know, U.S. forces are in Afghanistan, they're fighting the Taliban, they know that Al-Qaeda's there, there are a lot of bad guys there. We're rounding people up and we're literally holding tribunals on the spot, trying to determine whether they should be put on a plane and sent to Gitmo. There was a sense that if you were an Arab in Afghanistan in 2001, 2002, 2003, that you were a bad guy. When the U.S. went into Afghanistan, for example, we put a bounty on the head of Arabs living in Afghanistan. So we basically said, we will pay you X number of dollars if you turn in an Arab fighter. You can imagine the number of people that were turned in wrongly, either by a neighbor who held a grudge against them and just wanted to collect some cash by giving them to the Americans. But, Sean, remember that a lot of these Arabs actually went to Afghanistan in the 80s to fight the Soviet Union, and the U.S. supported them at the time. After the Soviet Union left Afghanistan in defeat, a lot of these fighters just stayed. They got married, they built families. I mean, they built a whole life over there. And we didn't really take that into account when we were looking for, you know, for Arabs in Afghanistan, let alone the Afghans who were living there that we determined should be part of the detainee population in Guantanamo Bay. So you can imagine how many people were just caught up in that and ended up being there for years and years for no reason whatsoever.
Just to give people an idea, Jasmine, of what your experience may have been like if you had been wrongly detained at Guantanamo in, say, I don't know, 2002, 2003, how long did it take you to become aware of why you're even there, and then after that, to potentially be released?
I mean, short answer, a very, very long time. It took at least a couple of years between the time that the first detainees were brought to Guantanamo Bay to the time when they were actually provided with a piece of paper that had a list of the reasons why they were there. And they were called allegations. The list of allegations, you know, so we, you know, we think that you did X, Y, and Z. Would you like to respond to these allegations?
So you're saying that you might be detained in a tiny cell, beaten and tortured for multiple years before anyone even tells you why?
Pretty much. Pretty much you could be.
The reality is that they will be treated humanely in accordance with the precepts of the convention, because that's the kind of people we are. We treat people well. We treat people humanely. And you can be sure that's what is happening with the detainees at Guantanamo and all others who are in the custody of the United States Armed Forces or other parts of the United States government.
Picture the first detainees arriving in 2002, early 2003, summer of 2004. The review boards start. It takes, you know, a few months. Sometimes it takes more than a year for the detainees to agree to participate. You know, because remember, these were not legal proceedings. These proceedings were not recognized by any court of law. So a lot of the detainees would refuse to participate in them because they're like, we're not going to give this proceeding any legitimacy because we should not even be here. And so if you can imagine that if you were there completely wrongly detained and some review board was set up to try to give you a chance to explain your story, but you're afraid that your words may be used against you. You know, you're afraid that you might not be able to offer evidence for your story. I mean, it was so, so complicated that it took at least a few years for it to become clear whether a detainee should be released or not.
In his first week in office, President Obama said he was going to shut it down.
This first executive order that we are signing by the authority vested in me as president.
You were an assistant to the Undersecretary of Defense at the time Obama was trying to shut down Guantanamo. What happened?
And promptly to close the detention facility at Guantanamo consistent with the national security and foreign policy interests of the United States and the interests of justice, I hereby order.
President Obama had made it very clear from day one that he was going to shut it down for a whole host of reasons, not just because it was a legal embarrassment and a legal travesty, but also it was one of the top issues that was being used and is still used today in terrorist recruitment efforts. Terrorists and extremists will use Guantanamo Bay as a way to recruit people into their movements.
It's counterproductive to our fight against terrorists because they use it as propaganda in their efforts to recruit.
I mean, you remember the photos from the early, early days of Guantanamo of men in orange jumpsuits kneeling down, hands handcuffed behind their backs, barbed wire, dogs, torture, waterboarding. I mean, all of that stuff was happening completely outside of the realm of any legal justification whatsoever. Of course, it's prime recruitment material.
And so why was it so hard for the Obama administration to shut it down?
So there are two types of people, right, at Guantanamo Bay. The people that we eventually decided to release and the people that, you know, for example, like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's actually a really bad guy. And we know that. And he's one of the people who's being tried for the September 11th attacks. There were challenges with both of those categories. The people that we wanted to release, first of all, we would try to release them to their home country, their country of origin. In some cases, though, they hadn't lived in that country of origin for years and years. And so that country wouldn't want them back. So let's say Saudi Arabia, for example, or Jordan, or, you know, whatever country, they were like, wait a minute, this person has not even lived here. We don't know what they've been up to. They've been in Gitmo, you know, so it becomes sort of a stigma that they carry around. So that was one challenge we had. Sometimes their home countries didn't want them. When we would try to send them to third countries, sometimes the third countries wouldn't want them. They'd be like, wait a minute, why are you trying to send these people to, oh, we have nothing to do with this. In a lot of cases, also, we wouldn't even take them. Even though the U.S. was responsible for bringing them to Guantanamo, we knew that they were wrongfully detained. We recommended them for release. We still couldn't bring them to the U.S. because of political considerations, an outcry from people here.
Do we have to release them in the United States? If we can't find a third country, what do we do with them?
So many challenges. And that's just with the people who we wanted to release. With the other category, like the people who we wanted to try.
Last November, Holder announced 9/11 mastermind suspect Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would be tried in federal criminal court in New York City.
There was a huge outcry when President Obama even suggested that they would be flown to the U.S., either to be held in maximum security prisons here or to be put on trial here.
New York Democrat Chuck Schumer asked him to look elsewhere.
The overwhelming consensus in New York, as you know, is that it shouldn't be there. And I just strongly urge you to make sure that that doesn't happen.
It was very difficult to convince members of Congress, U.S. taxpayers, that they should pay to fly these people who attacked our country into the country so that they could have a platform or somehow use that as a victory lap in some kind of way.
Republicans, like Senator Sessions, said Guantanamo suspects should not be tried anywhere on the U.S. mainland.
American people are not interested in terrorists being brought from Guantanamo to their own communities. Reality is a stubborn thing. Pretending that terrorists can safely be treated as common criminals will not make it so.
When I worked in the Obama administration, President Obama appointed two special envoys, one at the State Department and one at the Defense Department. Their sole job was to figure out how to release people from Guantanamo Bay. So reviewing their case files, making recommendations for release that the Secretary of Defense had to sign off on. There were regular meetings, if I remember correctly, and there were huge diplomatic efforts with other countries to try to convince those other countries to take them. So Gitmo has now been open under four presidents. So obviously it's not just a challenge for one president.
I just signed, prior to walking in, an order directing Secretary Mattis, who is doing a great job.
And in fact, President Trump actually, just before his first State of the Union address, signed an executive order to keep Guantanamo Bay open indefinitely.
To re-examine our military detention policy and to keep open the detention facilities in Guantanamo Bay.
12 years later, does Obama's vice president now have a better chance to shut it down?
He has a better chance only because we're getting closer and closer to the trial dates, or to a start date at least, for some of these trials, although they're not happening anytime soon. But you could imagine that over the next 4 years or 8 years, we're able to hold these trials and to hold people accountable. But then the question, Sean, becomes, well, if these trials are held and, okay, let's say, for example, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is found guilty in a court of law, well, where do you put him? So there is also a chance that you just end up keeping a portion of that prison open, of that detention facility open, if only to hold the few people that we could find guilty in an actual court of law.
But the U.S. needed a place to put Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And as you said, no states were willing. Does that mean perhaps not Guantanamo, but something like it was necessary at some point in this war on terror?
I mean, I would never say that something like Guantanamo Bay was necessary. President Bush could have brought four people to the Guantanamo Bay naval base that was already there. And that would have been the challenge that we would have had to deal with. Instead, he decided to bring hundreds and hundreds of people, just sweeping them off, you know, the streets of Afghanistan, and bringing them and creating this legal and moral and strategic mess that he did, that subsequent presidents had to clean up, basically. I mean, it didn't have to be this way. To answer your question, right, I don't know if we needed a place like Guantanamo Bay, but I certainly know that we didn't need it to be what it was.
After the break, detainee 441.
Support for Today Explained comes from Mint Mobile. Paying your monthly phone bill can be a real source of anxiety, especially if you've been making a bunch of calls to Djibouti. But it doesn't have to be, and Mint Mobile wants to help. They've got plenty of options with plans that range from 3 months to 6 months to a full year. By switching to Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. That includes unlimited text and talk, plus high-speed 5G data, and you can keep your same device and number. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, you can go to mintmobile.com/explained. That is mintmobile.com/explained. Once more, you can cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/explained. $45 upfront payment required. That's equivalent to $15 a month, obviously. New customers on a first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on the unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Support for today's episode comes from Constant Contact. Constant Contact believes the attention economy is real, and Constant Contact wants you to excel in the attention economy. If you're a business owner, a marketer, or anyone else just trying to break through the noise and reach customers, Constant Contact might be able to help. According to Constant Contact, their platform makes it easy to use email and SMS marketing to keep your message in front of your customers, reach new audiences, and communicate more effectively. They even offer a handful of writing assistance tools and automation features to help you get more from your marketing efforts. You can get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at constantcontact.com. You can go to constantcontact.com for a free trial. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
I had never spoken to someone who had been detained at Guantanamo Bay until I spoke to Mansoor, a Daifi. I didn't know what to expect, but I did not quite expect this.
Hey, guys!
Mansoor was bubbly.
Good morning or good afternoon, good whatever, at your place, at your time. I am Mansoor Daifi.
He was wearing an orange scarf, the same color as the orange jumpsuits detainees at Guantanamo wear.
I have another name, like 4-4-1, my internment serial number at Guantanamo. Smile troublemaker, the worst of the worst. W-O-W. I got those name at Guantanamo.
I asked him who he was before he became detainee 441, smiley troublemaker, or the worst of the worst.
You know, I born like a baby. Well, like when I born, like anyone else.
Effervescent.
I was born in a village in Yemen. I raised in a very conservative and tribal society. We live by tribal code, honor, integrity, courage, hospitality, and so on.
Mansoor says that he was a bright kid, so he eventually left his village to continue his schooling in Sana'a, Yemen.
When I started my high school, I moved to live with my aunt at the city. What was a new world? A lot of cars, buildings, streets, lights, wow, this is a new world, guys. So from there, I finished my high school. I learned a lot about the city, about life, about the new world.
Around this time, Mansoor says he gets a gig as a researcher.
Then I went to Afghanistan on a research mission. I was researcher assistant.
What were you researching in Afghanistan?
We were researching for one of the Islamic institutes about those groups in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, and new other groups. You know, their belief, their ideology, and so on. And my work was approved by Yemeni government, official work.
What were you trying to find out?
There was many groups there. Nobody knows about them. And there's lack of information. There was no kind of internet or no social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, whatever. You know, someone has to travel to get there, to get materials, to talk to the people, to interview them, and so on. I was the only assistant to that work.
And when were you there?
I was there in 2001, I think in July. Yeah. Don't talk much about it, because my lawyers are like, don't talk much about your time in Afghanistan. I said, okay. I have someone who is also watching me all the time, my lawyers.
Are your lawyers in the room right now?
No.
Okay, then tell me about your time in Afghanistan.
No, I can't, because they told me not to go in details about it, because still, they told me just not to go there so much.
I guess what I'm really trying to understand here, Mansoor, is how did you end up at Guantanamo?
One day I was in the restaurant, then we heard in Arabic channel that there was like airplane flew into buildings in the United States. We didn't pay much attention to it, honestly. When I was in Afghanistan, my mission for research, I was directed to work one of the charity organization who was our sponsor there. They get instructions from Saudi Arabia, they should liquid everything and leave the country. So from that point, I went to one of the friends who work in that charity, and we had like to distribute everything. There was like medical stuff, medicine, blankets, and he said, we need to take this to the Qunduz city, to the hospital, because they need immediate assistance. I said, okay. We took the charity organization car. While driving to that place, we were ambushed on the road. I was kidnapped by the warlord and sold to the CIA by the warlord as Al-Qaeda general. Then I was moved to the black side, one of the worst places on earth. You will be lucky if you came out alive. Then I was moved to another detention in Kandahar. Then from there I was shipped to Guantanamo. I was packed in orange. The shoes was orange. The uniform was orange. Everything was orange. But they put something around my neck, a sign which says, beat me. I got beating from Kandahar until I arrived at Guantanamo.
How long were you in Guantanamo before you figured out why you were there?
At the first, I was accused to be Al-Qaeda general or 9/11 insider. Then by 2015, they said no, unclear if he actually joined Al-Qaeda, because they said none of Al-Qaeda members or Al-Qaeda leaders recognize him member of Al-Qaeda. I said, guys, either you say Al-Qaeda or he's not Al-Qaeda. I don't know why I was there. And I used to torture the interrogators after 2012. I said, like, who are you? What's the new interrogators would come. What's your name? I said, Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda general, 9/11 insider. Come on, Mansoor, don't say that. I said, why? You guys kicked my fucking ass for the last, like, for 7 years, 8 years to say this stuff. Someone once asked me, how did you spend your 20s? I said, what? I don't know what you're talking about. I never lived my 20s. Time froze at that place. Imagine you were sent to a place totally disconnected from the world, from your life, from your families, from everything. You are being kept in a cement box or cage, being treated, tortured, experimented on, punished for practicing your religion. This is Guantanamo. And when you look, if you just now Google, Guantanamo, America's Battle Lab.
Google what? Guantanamo?
Guantanamo, America's Battle Lab.
Guantanamo, America's Battle Lab.
Did you find it?
I got it.
When General Jeffrey Miller arrived at Guantanamo by the end of 2002, and by the way, General Jeffrey Miller, before he went to Iraq and tortured detainees in Abu Ghraib and Boka prisons, he was at Guantanamo. That where he started developing what they call enhanced interrogation technique.
Who was there when you were in Guantanamo? Who else was there? What kinds of people did you meet?
All kind of people. You have students, teachers, journalists, doctors, paramedics, artists, singers, football players, bodybuilders, poets, all kind of people. There were some people from Taliban. They admitted they were with Al-Qaeda, like Al-Qaeda propagandists, Osama bin Laden bodyguards.
You were there for 14 years. You know, you didn't experience your 20s. Did you ever think you would get out?
Yes. We have strong faith. I remember one of the interrogators, he used to treat me all the time. You're going to rot here. I told him, I swear by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I will live here, whether you like it or not. As a Muslim, my faith already sealed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And I think no one can control that. When I met my lawyer in 2015, I told her, it is my time. I know I will leave soon.
What is your life like now that you've been released, Mansoor?
They forced me to leave to a place which I didn't want to go. They forced me to leave to Serbia. They told me either leave or rot in here. My life, in short words, I live in Guantanamo 2.0. As you see, as I told you, we're being treated like terrorists. Many of us, some of us still in jail, like New United Arab Emirates, people who were resettled in Emirates, they are still in jail for the last 5-6 years. In other countries, some of the brothers were sent to their own home countries where they're being tortured in prison again. We live in the stigma of Guantanamo. But although like those difficulties and unfortunate situation, I managed to finish my college this year, and my thesis is about rehabilitation and reintegration of former Guantanamo detainees into social life and the labor market. And we published my book, Don't Forget Us Here. I haven't met my family, and I'm trying to live to a place where I can build my family, start a life, get married, and have two little lovely girls. So, yeah.
في رضاك, في رضاك.
Before this interview, Mansoor, you sent us a song that was written by a detainee. Why did you send us that?
You know, it's a beautiful song, and we call it Guantanamo song. It's written by a former Guantanamo detainee. It is very emotional, and it's beautiful.
بغية العليل منية الكليل أن يراك أن يراك.
If you're going to complain about your sadness, just complain to Allah Almighty. That's it. So, no hate, no grudge, nothing. This is one of the things that help us to survive at Guantanamo.
Mansoor Adaifi is the author of Don't Forget Us Here. It's about his 14 years as detainee 441 at Guantanamo. Our episode today was produced by Halima Shah. It's Today Explained.
ينح الخلود كي يراك كي يراك قد أتاك بالعيون الدامعات في الليالي الساجيات
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.